the fifth aliyah of Parshas Achrimos begins with the Isser of Shchutei Chutz, of bringing karbanos, shetting karbanos outside of the Mishkan, outside of the Beis HaMikdash. And as Rav Shamshon Fall Hirsch emphasizes, we're not talking about Avodah Zarah here, we're talking about offerings to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but outside of the proper context. And the emphasis here is that the nature of the Avera is that one thinks he can turn to Hashem outside of the Torah's rules. He thinks he's doing the right thing, but he's doing it the wrong way. And that itself is very unfortunate and is just as prohibited. In Pasuk Yud Beis, we read about the prohibition of eating blood. And here, first of all, the phrasing seems not to fit. We don't think that we would be talking about eating blood. Blood is liquid. But nonetheless, the language here is lo sochal dam. And the Yerushalmi, in the 8th parak of Yuma, tells us that this is because achila is compared to shtia. But nonetheless, the Torah Tamima emphasizes that not for all purposes, because we wouldn't combine the two. So as far as a shear is concerned, if we want to evaluate for measurement purposes, we wouldn't bring together a liquid and a solid. So just to the extent that we say that shtia is like achila, that wouldn't extend to combining them for a shear. And the next pasuk, we read, V'ish ish mibnei Yisrael, u'menager hagar b'socham, asher yatsud, Seid chaya o'of asher ye'achel v'shafach es damo v'chiso be'afar. So the pasuk here talks about somebody who hunts an animal. So it's interesting that that's the language, because it wouldn't necessarily be the only context. So why it's phrased that way is interesting. We would have to assume that we are talking about for the purpose of eating, because hunting in general is not considered to be an appropriate profession for a nice Jewish boy. It's associated with people such as Esav and Nimrod. No, the Behuda has a tshuva in Yeridei in Siman Yud, where he explains that hunting as a sport is for many reasons not appropriate for Jews, but hunting here for the purposes of achila, and you shech the animal, so there is, together with that, an obligation of kisui hadam. So what is the reason for kisui hadam? Perhaps one would think that it's understandable, that it seems like it's an act of respect, and especially if we associate the dam with the nefesh, and we know that there is a notion of kvura that is itself an act of respect for the body. So if blood represents the life force, so it's understandable that there would be a notion of burying blood, but we do find other reasons associated with it. The Rashbam understands that it's therefore that we create the reality that the blood won't be roi la'achila, won't be able to be eaten, and therefore it sounds like this is essentially a protective measure, similar to the idea of a siag min haTorah that we find in other contexts. And this is something that Rabbi Simon discusses in his Sefer Imrei Baruch at length. Even though it's slightly different in nature than other concepts that we find in the Torah that are classified as the siag, as Rav Yosef Engel lists in his Sefer Asvin Daraisa, so usually what would be considered a siag would be a prohibition that would be there to keep us from violating another prohibition. For example, we just finished Pesach, so the Ran's understanding of the prohibition of owning chametz to keep us away from the more fundamental prohibition of eating chametz on Pesach. Here, we're being told to do something in order to keep us away from a prohibition, that being the prohibition of eating blood. So it's somewhat different. Perhaps it's comparable to the idea of the Torah's requirement, also related to the parsha here, of the obligation to fast on Yom Kippur, and we have a mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur, and here some of the Rishonim understand that that is in order to prevent us from being in a circumstance where we're not able to fast on Yom Kippur. So perhaps this is similar, being told to do something that would help avoid a violation of a prohibition. But one way or another, this is an interesting perspective, that that would be the purpose of this din, in order to prevent the violation of the Isser that we just read about, of eating the blood. And if that's the case, the Torah Tumimah discusses perhaps other implications of this, that maybe this is why this wouldn't extend to Mekdashim, because we are already separated from Mekdashim, similar to how the prohibition of Bayira, Bayimatzeh doesn't apply to that, because we are already separated from the Chametz of Mekdashim. And he suggests maybe that's also why this wouldn't apply to behemoths as well, because we're already separated from them. My grandfather in a Sefer Meshivas Nefesh suggests that that's already taking it too far. The fact is, blood we're already also separated from because of its own prohibition, and he doesn't think that that explanation really helps us too much. It's already a Gzeres HaKasuv, presumably. But the idea of the Rashbam stands on its own, that perhaps this is the reasoning why the Torah gives us this din of Kisui Hadam. Rabbi Simon, in his essay there, coming from the perspective that this is about Isiag, quotes from the Satmar Rav, the Divrei Yoel, that the notion of imposing such safeguards is itself a reflection of modesty, of one having an awareness of his limits, and recognizing that he shouldn't look for challenges, look for nisyonos more than necessary, and impose restraints and these types of restrictions because one should be aware of their own limitations. This pasuk is also the source for a few other limudim. The Gemara Maseches Chulin and Daf Pei Zayin Amud Aleph notes that the relationship at the end of the pasuk here, v'shafach es damo v'chiso ba'afar, that there's a connection between the pouring out of the blood and also the covering of the blood. So there are at least two points the Gemara derives from here. One has to do with bizoy mitzvos, that we have to have a respectful attitude to mitzvos. So therefore, just as the spilling of the blood is done with the hand and not with the foot, so too the covering of the blood should be done with the hand and not with the foot, as one might think that the blood is there on the ground and perhaps it's easy to kick the dirt on top of it in order to cover it. Nonetheless, that would be considered a disrespectful way to do it, and a bizui mitzvah, and that's not appropriate. The Gemara in the second parak of Shabbos and the Sugyas of Chanukah also derives from here a broader principle of bizui mitzvos that is expanded from this context. And the Gemara Chulin also derives from here another broader principle. It's extended to other contexts as well. The idea of a schus to mitzvos that should be protected. So here, the mitzvah of Kisui Hadam kind of serves as a representation for other mitzvos, that the person who does the shechita has a schus to the mitzvah of Kisui Hadam. So if somebody else were to intervene and to decide to cover up the blood that somebody else had shechted the animal for, they would, so to speak, be stealing the mitzvah. And the Gemara there in Chulin says that there's a knas, that they should have to pay asar zehuvim, they should have to pay these 10 gold coins in order to compensate the original individual for stealing his mitzvah. So the next pasuk tells us, ki nefesh kol basar damo v'nafshohu, va'omar levnei Yisrael, dam kol basar lo sochelu, ki nefesh kol basar damohi kol achlav yukareis. So this language of kinefesh kol basar damohu, so Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Sefer Darash Moshe poses the question of why it is that the Torah takes such effort to point this out. And he notes that really it's a question because we normally have a rule of mimashki Yisrael, that only that which is kosher for a Jew to eat is qualified to be used on the Mizbeach. So non-kosher animals, non-kosher food is normally not able to be brought on the Mizbeach. So here we have a prohibition of eating dam, and yet the dam is brought on the Mizbeach. So that seems to be a glaring contradiction to the general principle of what is acceptable on the Mizbeach. So here the Torah has to emphasize that there's a reason why this is an exception, and that it is a extra mila, it's a special quality of the blood, that it's used for the kapara of the nefesh. That's what this pasuk is emphasized. And that itself is the reason why we shouldn't eat it. So it's an unusual situation that here the fact that it is offered on the Mizbeach is the same reason why it shouldn't be eaten, but it's not like other prohibitions where that would create a reason for it not to be offered on the Mizbeach. And there's a similar point that connects to the next pasuk, v'chol nefesh Asher tochal nevelu trefa beezra chuvager v'chibes begadav v'rachatz b'mayim v'tame ad ha'er v'toher. So here, talking about the tuma that comes from an nevela, so Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, his Emes Liakov, emphasizes that the connection that's being highlighted here about Tumas Devela, specifically referencing the association with the blood, he connects this to the explanation of the Ramban in Sefer Bereishis, that the idea that Shechita is a matir for Jews, as opposed to when it comes to non-Jews, so the only thing that's necessary is that the animal be killed, that they're prohibited in eating an Eiver Menachai, they can't eat the living animal, but Jews need that the animal actually be shechted, so it has to do with the fact that there is a life force here that's associated with the blood, so all the blood has to be let out, and it's specifically Shechita that has that effect, that drains out all the blood. And nevela is metame because the animal dies without having all the blood taken out. So to skip ahead here a little bit, to look to Pasuk Gimel of Parak Ches here, towards the end of the Aliyah, so we have the language, Kamaasei Eretz Mitzrayim, Asher Yeshavtim Bo, Lo Sasu, Uchamaasei Eretz Kenan, Asher Ani Mevi Eschem Shama, Lo Sasu, Uchukoseim Lo Seleichu. So here, this language of Kamaasei Eretz Mitzrayim, here, the Rashi of Karen B'Yavna, Rav Goldwicht, has an essay about this, that this admonition not to act in the ways of Mitzrayim can't be about Arayos specifically, because those are detailed later in the Torah, and also the language of Ki Maaseh Eretz Mitzrayim is noteworthy, and he explains that this does have to do with the general area of Arayos, and the fact that there was a great passion that the Mitzrim had towards that area, but that type of passion should be harnessed in a positive direction, and that's what the Torah is conveying here, that you shouldn't take that emotion and that energy towards the direction that the Mitzrim took it in, and instead should divert it towards more positive directions and towards the Avodas Hashem, and that's the thrust here that the Torah is conveying with this specific pasuk. So here, the next pasuk is very significant for its implications and the way Chazal interpreted it, and has some added levels of meaning, and was a part of the major debate regarding the relationship of Torah and other studies. It's not necessarily so immediately obvious, but the language of the pasuk here is Esh Mishpatai Ta'asu, V'es Chukosai Tishmeru, L'aleches Bohem, Ani Hashem Elokeichem. So you shall do my Mishpatim, and you should keep my chukim, to follow them, to walk with them, l'lachas b'hem. So, what's the significance here? So the Medrash has an interpretation of what's being conveyed here, the Taras Kohenim, that l'lachas is meant to convey specifically that this should be the ikur, that this should be your only masumat, and this should be your only involvement, and that you shouldn't mix anything else with them, and that you shouldn't say, okay, now that I've done this, I can go on to do other things. So reading that medrash, one would perhaps get the impression that it's coming to discourage involvement in any other kind of studies, and that it seems to be reflecting very much a Torah-only kind of philosophy, and saying that that should really be your complete focus and your only involvement. But it's noteworthy that Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch, in his commentary on this pasuk, sees it differently, and he understands it to be saying that if it's telling you that the Torah should not be made into tofel, should be ikur as opposed to tofel, so it's saying that other things can be tofel. So therefore, it's not saying that there shouldn't be any other involvements. It's saying that there can be other studies that one is pursuing, but that those should be tofel, and the Torah specifically should be ikur. And when it says don't mix anything else with them, it means other things shouldn't be equated with them, But it's not to say that there shouldn't be any involvement at all, and that the language of not saying that one can abandon and go on to other things, it means to leave the Torah completely. But in order to incorporate other things into the overall learning experience, that in his understanding is appropriate. So it's a very different type of interpretation of what the Medrash is saying, not at all to the exclusion of other studies, but to emphasize Torah's role and to see a place for other studies in the overall picture, as long as Torah is the ikkar. So it's also very significant that the ultimate successor to Rav Hirsch and his kehila here in Washington Heights was Rav Shimon Schwab. And Rav Schwab was somebody who had done a lot of investigation into the role of other studies in one's education and had generated a lot of the literature here by writing letters to various gedolim, so some of which that has been published because of his inquiries, such as an essay of Rabbi Chanan Wasserman's that was published in the Kovach Shurim, and an essay of Rabbi Baruch Ber that was published in the end of his essays on Kiddushin in the Berakhos Shmuel, the last piece in the Berakhos Shmuel on Kiddushin. So regarding that, so Rav Schwab writes here on this pasuk in his Sefer on Chumash that he talks about this same medrash that Rav Hirsch had expounded, and Rav Schwab writes that when he was younger, he indeed wrote letters to Gedolim about this topic, and he talks about what happened to this whole project that he was pursuing at that time, and he fills in the details. And he said that Rav Lazer Yudelfinkel told him that he should leave it alone, that he should not keep going with this investigation, because he said that the perspective of the machmirim, of those who were very discouraging of such pursuits, would be a gzeira shein hatzibur yecholim lamud ba, that people would not be able to stick to such policies, and therefore it wasn't a good idea. And he quotes there also that the Imri Emes said to him, the Ger Rebbe said to him, that he should be very careful with the kavod of Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch, as he is a living Sefer Musar. So Rav Schwab writes there that he left it alone. He writes, Es Nafshi Hitzalti, even though other people printed it. So that's how he reports about his involvement in this project, and that's all printed there in the Sefer HaTorah on this pasuk, a follow-up to what his predecessor, what Rav Schwab, writes about his interpretation of this pasuk. And then in the final pasuk in this aliyah, it says, "Ushmartem es chukosai v'es mishpatai asher yaso sam hadam v'chai bohem ani Hashem." So you shall keep these chukim and these mishpatim, that a person will do them and will live by them. I am Hashem. So here, this seems very powerful and yet also very broad. So what exactly is the message here? So first of all, the language of Ha'adam v'chai. So Chazal often use Ha'adam to make as a reference to all people, non-Jews as well. So Rav Hirsch here understands that to be the point, that here we're talking about Olam Haba, as Rashi and Unkelus understand. That if we're talking about life, we are talking about Olam Haba, because in this world here, people die, so it must be talking about Olam Haba. So Rav Hirsch understands that Ha'adam, the language that Chazal understand to include non-Jews as well, it's making the point that this is a way of emphasizing that this Shmira of Chukim and Mishpatim is a source of Olam Haba for Jews and for non-Jews. However, we should also point out that Rashi and Unkelus saying that this has got to be a reference to the next world, this pasuk is also interpreted as referring to this world, because the Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph and in Yuma on Daf Pehei Amud Aleph also understand from here the general principle of Yavor V'Ali Hareg, that even though sometimes we say Hareg V'Al Yavor, and that there are a handful of dinim for which one is obligated to be moser nefesh, but the general principle is, for the overwhelming majority of dinim, that pikuach nefesh doches hakol, that one is not supposed to give up his life for dinim, and the guiding principle is, from this pasuk, v'chai behem, you should live by them. So in that interpretation, that is talking about this world, it's talking about physical life here, so it's multiple levels of interpretation, that V'chai Behem is telling you you should live physically in this world, and therefore if there is a threat to life, so overall, for the vast majority of mitzvot, pikuach nefesh, docha sakol, and Rashi and Unkelus are adding on also, there's also a meaning beyond this of Olam Haba, which has other implications too. The Chafetz Chaim also emphasizes another added level of interpretation in many of his writings. So first of all, in his introduction to the Mishnah Berurah in Chelek Aleph, so he notes that it's very important to learn Halacha Lamaisa like Arach Chaim. And he writes, it has a remez in this pasuk that Ushmartem and Asher Yaso Som Ha'adam, that is telling you that you should be very careful about the things that people do and the things that come up in life that affects how you practice. So the everyday things about Aruch Chaim, should be a big focus in terms of what you learn about. So he writes that in his introduction to Mishnah Berurah, which is about Aruch Chaim, and in his introduction to Shmiras HaLashon. So he emphasizes that we have to be very careful about all mitzvos because they represent parts of the body, which would therefore be deficient if one is not careful about the mitzvos that correlate to them. So if one would speak Lashon Hara, so then that would impact on the mouth, and that would therefore represent itself in a deficient way, and that would be bad. And therefore, that's what this pasuk is also conveying, the chai bohem, that you should live through them, as opposed to ba'avuram, that your whole body should be able to be functional because of the mitzvos that correlate to them should be practiced in the proper way. And that message, specifically in the context of Lashon Hara, takes on greater significance, that the mouth has many mitzvos that are associated with it, both in terms of how you talk about people when they're not present, but also how you talk to people when they are present. One of the major themes of Kavod and Anas Devarim, a theme that was in the recent Daf Yomi and other contexts, but especially in this period of Sfira, when we have this extra emphasis on the kavod that is shown to others, and the idea that Chazal transmit to us, that the students of Rabbi Akiva suffered so greatly, al shelo nahagu kavod zeh, that there was a lack of kavod that was being shown. So the great significance that is put on how people are treated, and this is generally transmitted through the mouth, is another reason to put a great emphasis on just how significant that is, and to bring great care to this and all areas.